Welcome to Leading Questions, a city election special, part three. I'm Dave Davies. We're in the home stretch of the primary election season. On Tuesday, Philadelphia voters will pick candidates for a number of offices, including city council and mayor. The tragic Amtrak derailment Tuesday is a stark reminder of the unexpected challenges that can confront the mayor of a big city. Economic crisis, civic unrest, a building collapse that exposes weaknesses in regulation. That's why we should consider not just what candidates say they plan to do, but what kind of leadership qualities they'll bring to the job. We'll need a leader with sound judgment, talented staff, the highest ethical standards, a gift for communication and political skills. Earlier in this season, we've spoken with past mayors about their experience and looked at key issues in the race. In our final program, we'll take a closer look at the records of six Democratic mayoral candidates to see what leadership skills they've shown or failed to show. And we'll have some fun, too, listening to some special moments on the campaign trail and speaking with a photographer who's taken more than 10,000 photos of the candidates. We'll take stock of a big judicial race and revisit the changing Philadelphia neighborhood of Brewery Town to see how the race looks from there. First, though, we're going to take a minute to assess the state of the race with NewsWorks 99 blogger Brian Hickey and reporter Katie Colinari. Brian, Katie, welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Dave.
First to you, Katie. Money's big in any election, and we've seen millions spent in this one. But it's really not like any election we've ever seen here, is it?
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. And to get the context here, remember that the city put strict limits on the size of donations to the candidates, but independent expenditure groups, aka super PACs, can collect checks as big as they want and spend as much as they want. We knew from the TV ads that they were spending a lot of money, but when we finally saw their financial reports a week ago, the scale of their spending was, well, staggering. Three super PACs in the race spent twice as much as the candidates. And the super PAC funded by the three Bellakinwood traders who support school choice and are supporting State Senator Anthony Williams spent $7.5 million. That was more than all the candidates and the other super PACs combined. Candidate Milton Street raised that issue at a televised debate.
We need quality public education across the board. And we're not going to get that if we left the millionaires out on Sea Lion Avenue by the mayor's office. Senator Williams has sold his soul to the millionaires.
Another thing we learned is which unions contributed to the largest super PAC backing Jim Kenney. And to our surprise, it turned out that half of that money was coming from a carpenters union with an address in Edison, New Jersey. Local carpenters in Philadelphia have supported Williams. Another surprise was that a third of the money came from Local 98, the electricians union headed up by the powerful John Dougherty, and that was less than we expected.
Okay, a lot of money being spent. Brian, do we know who's ahead in this race?
Well, actually, we do, Dave. The first independent poll of the campaign season just came out on Wednesday, and it shows Kenny with a substantial lead over Lynn Abraham and Tony Williams.
Now, Brian, Anthony Williams, it seems, made a move some time back when he wanted to change the dynamics of the race, calling for Police Commissioner Charles Ramsey's firing. Wow.
Right, Dave. When the campaign conversation shifted to whether candidates would want to bring Commissioner Ramsey back, I couldn't help but think back to a one-on-one chat I had with Williams back in April. It was after a debate here at WHYY, and Williams told me that police officers should be fired for using disparaging language about race or sexual orientation or faith. And from that point on, he pushed the other candidates, namely Jim Kenney, who was endorsed by the FOP to sign on to that idea.
Right. He's made a lot of this. Now, Kenny says, in fact, he does support firing officers, but Williams says that wasn't forceful enough or soon enough.
Yes, he just doesn't want to do it instantaneously. And Williams has stuck to that line of campaigning ever since. And there have been ads dredging up Kenny comments from the 90s and beyond and a pitched conversation about stop and frisk practices.
Right. We'll be hearing a bit of that ad later on in which they make a lot of some past comments by Jim Kenney about police conduct. But that does bring up another point here, Katie, and that's negative ads. We've seen literally millions of dollars in TV ads, hardly any of them negative. What kind of race is this?
That's right, Dave. And other than the one that Brian just mentioned, the closest to negativity we get is this jab from former District Attorney Lynn Abraham.
Jim Kenney and Tony Williams are fighting over public schools versus charters. I think they're both wrong. It's making sure they all get a good education.
And for the rest of that ad, Lynn Abraham stays on positive themes about herself. And it's interesting, Katie, you know, it's an axiom of politics that when you're behind, you attack. why didn't the trailing candidates in this race go to war with their TV ads?
Well, this is where the money again, I think, tells the story. Williams, who was behind, did run that one attack spot, but he didn't have the campaign cash to buy a lot of TV time. Now, his three rich friends funding that super PAC could have waged a potentially devastating negative campaign, but for whatever reason, they just didn't.
Okay, now, Brian, there was a fascinating little flap earlier this month over the Inquirer's endorsement of Anthony Williams.
That's right, Dave. Our reporting sparked one of the most peculiar insider baseball issues of the campaign. That lukewarm endorsement was overshadowed by suspicions that publisher Jerry Lenfest overruled the editorial board's decision to actually back the Kenny campaign. That suspicion continued even after editor Bill Marimo said that he, in fact, made that final call. Then, several days later, Inky editorial page editor Harold Jackson took the Williams campaign to the woodshed. He called it a quote-unquote rudderless campaign that never distinguished itself on any issue. And those words directly challenged the newspaper's endorsee. Jackson told me that it was nothing more than an example of his personal opinion running counter to the paper's institutional position. And as someone who oversaw a newspaper's mayoral coverage in 2007, that explanation made a little sense to me.
That's when you were at City Paper, right?
It was.
This was an interesting episode. Finally, Brian, Jim Kenny may be the one who decriminalized small amounts of marijuana while on council, but former Judge Nelson Diaz seems, well, high on the idea.
This came up at a recent Fox 29 debate.
Should Philly take the leap and just legalize it?
I want some, yes.
Well, Diaz later told me that he's not, in fact, a stoner and that he was just making a quirky comment to stand out from the crowd. But that moment was so indelible that it overshadowed even Milton Street talking about kangaroos knocking over trash cans in Philly neighborhoods. I didn't ask a follow-up on that one because there's really nothing more that can be said about it.
Wow. Okay, Brian, Katie, thanks.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Give me some brew and I might just chill, but I'm the type that like to light another joint like Cypress Hill. I still do be spit loogies when I puff on it. I got some bucks on it.
Turn on the TV during primetime or morning drive, and chances are pretty good you'll see an ad for the presumed frontrunner in the race.
Jim Kenny, the block-by-block mayor we need to move Philadelphia ahead.
In our first mayoral profile, our producer Shai Ben-Yaakov combs through Kenny's record for clues as to what kind of mayor he'd be.
Our police department over the course of my lifetime has become more diverse than it was in the 60s when all the cops looked like me.
It's 10:30 on a Saturday morning, and Jim Kenny is already making his second campaign stop. Right now he's speaking to a largely African-American crowd at the headquarters of State Representative Sherelle Parker in the city's Cedarbrook section, far from Kenny's home turf. Kenny grew up at 3rd and Snyder, a working-class Irish South Philadelphia neighborhood and home of the Mummers. His firefighter father and Jesuit priests shaped his political future.
The issue of public service has always been important from my early childhood, watching my dad, you know, serve the city, and then also going to St. Joe's Prep and having the Jesuits teach you what service really means and how you really make yourself happy by being in service to others.
Kenny started his political career while still in college, working for State Senator Vincent Fumo. He worked with community leaders like Barbara Capozzi.
Sometimes you have to just go sit with somebody who understands a broader array of issues and how they really impact people, just to feel like you're talking to somebody with some common sense. And Jim has street smarts and book smarts.
Kenny is known now for supporting progressive legislation, but in the 90s, Kenny authored a bill to ban aggressive panhandling, supported school vouchers, and opposed a civilian board to review police conduct. He also voted against banning military-style assault weapons in 1993, though he voted for it 15 years later. Some of his comments from that time became grist for one ad from state senator and mayoral candidate Anthony Williams.
This is what Jim Kenny once said about policing our community. We now have discussions, ironically, about no longer letting police officers use pepper gas. I mean, come on. You can't use the flashlights. You can't use the clubs on the head. You can't shoot anybody. What's next? Are we going to hand them feather dusters?
Kenny says he regrets those comments made in 1997, but that they did represent his position at the time. However, Kenny also pushed for domestic partnerships in the 90s. Now he's an outspoken supporter of same-sex marriage and other LGBT rights. Kenny is known to have a temper. One incident stands out to Howard Kane, who worked with Kenny in Senator Fumo's office. It was the early 90s, and former Philadelphia Mayor Frank Rizzo had a daily radio show. Kenny was asked to tape it each day.
Every day at 3 o'clock, the ex-mayor would come on. And by 4 o'clock, Jim would become so angered at what the ex-mayor was saying that the office staff knew not to bother him. Between 3 and 5, you just let him be because he was working himself up into a real fit of anger. And one time I saw him throw a beeper against the wall with such force that it lodged in the wall.
What some call a temper, others, including Barbara Capozzi, call passion.
I mean, let's face it, there's a lot of things to get upset about in this city and the way it runs, and all the needs that go unmet, and Jim gets upset about them and his face turns red.
Kenny has garnered the support of all of the municipal unions in Philadelphia and many of the building unions. Most notably, Local 98 of the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers has funded an independent group, Building a Better PA, that's running ads on Kenny's behalf. Local 98 is headed by John Dougherty, who grew up near Kenny in South Philadelphia. Multiple sources who declined to be interviewed on the record for this story expressed concern about the money Local 98 is throwing behind Kenny. But one who would talk on tape is former Philadelphia managing director Phil Goldsmith.
I think the issue we have in this campaign is the independent expenditures, and I put independent in quotations marks. I don't think anyone that understands or has been around Philadelphia politics thinks that these contributions aren't in some way, shape, or form coordinated with the campaign.
Kenny defends his union support.
Working families are supporting me. People who work for a living are supporting me. And I'm very proud of that and would be proud of it whether I win or lose.
Kenny controversially altered payments to city pensioners. In 1999, the city decided when pension investments exceed their goals, it would distribute additional money to retirees. But there was a caveat. The fund had to be at least 76% full. In 2007, Kenny authored a bill that allows the payments even when the pensions are underfunded. Mark McDonald is spokesman for Mayor Michael Nutter.
It set up a situation where in the years that followed, you potentially would have disbursements being made out of the pension adjustment fund to pensioners when the fund really wasn't healthy enough to do it.
The first such payments, $31 million, went out to retirees this month, despite the fact that the pension fund is only 46% full. But Kenny defends his bill, calling the payments cost of living adjustments.
I had people who are widows of firefighters and police officers killed in the line of duty who were getting under $1,000 a month in a pension, raising three kids by themselves.
It's worth pointing out that there's no negotiated cost of living adjustment for pensions in the city union contracts. By the way, Kenny started collecting his own pension, about $91,000 a year, when he stepped down from his city council seat. But he'd gladly put that off at least four more years if elected mayor. I'm Shai Ben-Yaakov.
In this election year, we've been spending some time in the North Philadelphia neighborhood known as Brewery Town to get the view of the mayor's race from residents of a changing area of the city. Like many neighborhoods in Philadelphia, Brewery Town is attracting new people and new investments, but it also suffers from chronic problems like trash and tensions between longtime residents and newcomers. In the next part of our series, Around the Corner, Katie Colinari introduces us to two voters struggling to decide which mayoral candidate is best for them and their changing neighborhood.
What up?
Andre Wright and Max Ochester clasp hands on the corner of 29th and Girard in Brewery Town. They've been friends going on 5 years. They're also active voters who pay attention. So we brought them here to talk about their hopes for the city's next mayor, but we'll get to that a bit later. This street corner means different things for these two guys in their late 30s. For Ochester, it's where he started his small business. For Wright, it's where he grew up before rising property values forced his family to move out. Most afternoons, Wright can be found a few blocks from here at the playing fields at 30th and Jefferson Streets. And on this warm spring day, he's at the baseball diamond, where his team, the Brewers, are warming up for practice. The team is part of Give and Go, the nonprofit youth sports program Wright founded in 2009. Giving these kids his time keeps him connected to the neighborhood. In 2003, his parents' landlord decided to sell the house they rented on 29th Street. His parents couldn't afford to buy it, so they moved to a subsidized home in Mount Airy.
I think maybe the landlord was under pressure. Like I said, the taxes on homes went up. The value of homes was going up.
Wright came of age in the 90s when Brewerytown was racked by drug violence. But he says there was also a strong village mentality. Walking down his old block, Wright sees some familiar faces.
What's up, Ryan?
But he points to some abandoned row houses.
We're from generations of families living in one house and being passed down and passed down to them not being here anymore. And it's like, you know, what happened to them? Like, is this similar to what happened to my family?
Today, Wright lives in nearby Strawberry Mansion and works in the city's public schools. He wants to come back to Brewerytown, but as property values rise, along with new developments, Wright worries he won't be able to afford it.
And if I don't, you know, get on the ball of trying to buy a house in Brewerytown now, you know, my clock might run out.
Back on the corner of 29th and Girard, he tells Ochester he sees plenty of for sale signs around the neighborhood.
I don't know whether that's a good sign or a bad sign. Maybe the more for sale signs go up, the higher the price is going to be, maybe? I think
people are snatching them up left and right from what I see.
Ochester also feels the pressures of a neighborhood in flux. He grew up in Mount Airy and moved to Brewerytown after stints in Seattle and New Orleans. In 2013, he opened a record store on 29th Street and called it Brewerytown Beats. Ochester first discovered vinyl as a teenager and has become an obsessive collector. The shop is filled with more than 20,000 records from jazz to hip-hop to funk.
My collection is just amassing, you know, great amounts of things. It's not necessarily like organizing everything by genre and year and, you know, who played on this. And, you know.
And yet, he still seems to know where everything is. The shop helps him meet people in the neighborhood. Ochester recently got a call from one woman whose father had passed away and left behind his record collection.
So I went in and looked through them for probably about a half an hour, 45 minutes, and talked to her about some of the albums that I knew. And we ended up talking for another 2.5 hours.
But business on 29th Street was often slow. 3 weeks ago, Ochester moved his shop around the corner to Girard Avenue, giving him more room and, he hopes, more foot traffic. Brewerytown Beats joins a number of new stores opening up on the business corridor, including a tattoo parlor and a microbrewery. Ochester knows he's part of the changes happening in the neighborhood, and he feels conflicted about it.
Right now I'm struggling, but I'm hoping for that change of people walking around, not people that look like me necessarily, but just more people, more, you know, activity in the neighborhood. And that's from the business point of view. From the home buying and renting point of view, it's completely different.
Like Wright, Ochester feels the clock ticking. He and his girlfriend are expecting a baby in November.
And if I don't look into buying a house now, I'll be priced out within the next year. So.
Wright and Ochester got to this corner by different paths, but they share the sense that there's a lot at stake in Tuesday's primary, and they still don't know which mayoral candidate will get their vote.
I want to pick somebody. I know, because it's coming around, it's right around the corner.
It's always the lesser of 2 years.
Ochester was living in New Orleans 8 years ago, but Wright says he felt then like Michael Nutter was the clear choice. This time, the choice between candidates seems fuzzy to him, although the issues the city faces are in sharper focus.
Things are really, really heated in the city right now, especially, you know, with the police, you know, the police and the public and, you know, the infrastructure. There's a lot going on in the city now.
I asked them why it's so hard to choose. Ochester says he doesn't feel like he can relate to most of the candidates.
Because nothing seems personal. It's all politics. And there's never any personal one-on-one time. And I know it's impossible to come out and meet every single person in the city, but nobody comes across genuine.
Wright is also yearning for a mayor who'll make a more personal connection with voters like him and spend more time in the neighborhood. He wants the next mayor to see what he sees. Brewerytown is quickly becoming a more appealing place, with new storefronts and rehabbed houses. But it's no longer the close-knit community he remembers.
Are the candidates going to do enough to make Brewerytown a better community? you know, not just a community, but also something that I can invest in myself.
On Tuesday, Wright says he'll vote for the candidate he's least unsure about. Ochester says he'll do the same. I'm Katie Culinary.
For more from our series Around the Corner, visit newsworks.org/mayor. We'll hear about the other candidates' records and qualifications shortly, but we also wanted to share some of the lighter moments from the campaign. This is from a debate I moderated, at which I invited each candidate to ask a question of another candidate. Doug Oliver chose Jim Kenney, and this was his question.
At a recent mayoral forum, you were asked who you would vote for mayor, if you could not vote for yourself. You identified that that would be me. I would like you to expand on why it is that you believe that if not you, that I would be the best suited man to be mayor of the city of Philadelphia.
Well, you only have 1 minute.
I have an answer. First of all, I think you're smart. I really do. I think you're smart. I think you work hard. I think you articulate well. I think you articulate a vision well. I think you're young. I think you're handsome. And I don't want to go out. I don't want to go on a date. I just want to, you know.
We'll take a short break now. When we return,
Milton Street glares at me a lot. He's a really civil person. When I talk to him, he's nice. He's never rude. But when I walk into a room, his eyebrows furrow and he stares at my camera.
Don't go away. Leading Questions returns in a moment.